So, hello everyone. Hope everyone is doing good and are safe. So, today I will be presenting a talk titled Talking Tabs Communicating Across Browsing Context. And by the end of this talk, we can expect to understand the different ways of communicating across tabs or windows. And yeah, so this is the main agenda of this topic. And before we move forward, I will quickly introduce myself. So, I'm Akshat and I'm based out of India. And I'm working as a software engineer with Uber as a part of the risk team. And I've been associated with open source for the last 5 years now. And it all started with me making contributions to orgs during my college days, like Mozilla, Firefox, etc. And I mean, since then, my love for the community has been ever growing. And in my free time, I love to read about technology and related topics. Now, without any further delay, let us move into the main agenda. So, yeah, as the topic reads, communicating across browsing context. So, let us see the primary modes of communicating here. So, the first one is the shared memory approach. In this case, we have a shared memory space where different browsing contexts can read or write data from, enabling in a way how to communicate, right? And the second way is to communicate via messaging through different messaging styles like post message style messaging, broadcast message, etc. And we'll be discussing some of them in details in the later half of the session. So, yeah, before we go into the specifics, here are some related terms used across this talk. So, firstly, browsing context. So, by browsing context, we actually mean the environment in which a browser displays a document, right? In modern browser, it usually is a tab, but it can definitely be a, I mean, window or even parts of a page like an iframe, right? And next is origin. So origin is defined as a combination of the scheme, which is the protocol, host, which is the domain, and the port of the URL used to sort of identify a URL, right? So basically, when we say things to be of same origin, so what we mean there in that case is that the scheme, host, and the port, all of them match for a URL, right? So to give a very, very simple example, so for example, one of the URL is http example.com slash app1 and second is http example.com slash app2. So here the scheme is http, the sort of domain is example.com and the port is 80, right? So all three of them matches for these two URLs and we can hence say that they are of same origin, right? And to lastly explain the execution context. So, I mean, it's sort of an abstract concept of an environment, I mean, where the JavaScript code is actually evaluated and executed, right? So, yeah, moving on. So now, without wasting any time, let us move on to the shared memory approach. So the first one in this category is the local storage, and most of us might be familiar with it and might have used local storage sometime, somewhere, right? I mean the set item method and the get item method, so we must be familiar with that. So now let us look at it and how see how we can communicate via this method across browsing context, right? So firstly the features. So local storage is it is a key value store and the data is shared between all tabs and windows from the same origin. So again by same origin we mean that the sort of the scheme, the host name and the port of the URL should match. And lastly, the data does not expire even if we restart the browser or do a OS reboot. So in a sense, it is persisted. So let us now see the architecture. So in this figure, we can see that one browsing context sets a value in the local storage via the set item method. And on the other hand, the other browsing contexts are listening for any change in the storage. And I mean, as soon as the value is updated in the storage, the other tab receives it in the listener callback, and then updates can be made based on the newer value, right? So let us quickly see a demo of it. So here in this web page, we can see there are four counter, I mean, there are five counter UIs with an increment button. So the first one at the top corresponds to the sort of the button and the counter in the main document, and four of the other boxes are actually iframes loaded onto this web page. So we'll click on the increment in the document, and we can see that all the corresponding counters are sort of immediately sort of reflecting the updated value. And when we do it from the iframe, we can see the same, right? Let us try to open it in a new tab and then see. Let us increment from this tab and see it here. So yeah, we can see that we can communicate sort of across the browsing context via a shared memory that is local storage here, right? Let us go back to the slides. So we saw a demo of it. Now let us look at some use cases. So basically one of them is storing shopping cart items, user preferences like themes, and sometimes auth tokens as well, although it's not sort of safe to do that. So here in this case, I mean, we added listener on the storage, which actually enables us to sync the information across browsing context. So some gotchas to look out for. So it is prone to security hazards. I mean, for example, if a site is vulnerable to access attacks, so local storage is not safe in that way, since any script can access local storage. Also, people many times tend to clear cache, and that might lead to loss of data. So in a way, we can say that it has sort of very limited data protection measures. Next is it is prone to race condition, as there is no locking mechanism on data. Then next is that it can only store string data. So I mean, this makes it pretty useless for storing data that's even slightly more complex than a string. I'm sure, I mean, we can definitely sort of serialize everything, including data types, into string and then store it, but it's sort of a hack and also adds that time for that serialization step. Next is that it is synchronous, and that means that each of the operation in local storage happens one at a time. And for a complex application, it will definitely slow down our app's runtime. And the last one is that it sort of limits the size of data that we can store. So it's around 5 MB across all major browsers. And this is fairly a low limit for people building apps that are data intensive. And nowadays, people also build offline functionalities, so that might need even more space. So yeah, next one is cookies. So let us quickly have a look at it as well. So cookies are small strings of data that are stored directly in the browser. And the unique part is that it can be set by web servers as well, using a response type set cookie HTTP header. So the sort of servers can sort of set cookie HTTP header, and via that method set the cookie value as well. And the value of the cookie consists of an sort of in the format name equal to value pairs, delimited by a semicolon, and each of that sort of section of a name equal to value pair is actually a separate individual cookie. So we'll have a look at the architecture now. So yeah, here we can actually see how the cookie looks like. So in this case, there are two cookies, one with the key name _GA and other with the key name counter. So here, one of the browsing contexts sets the cookie via the document.cookie API, and the other browsing context, I mean, have a function called after every interval through the set interval web API, and to sync the cookie data across browsing contexts. So what it does is basically it calls the function multiple times to check whether the cookie has been updated, and if yes, then it can take appropriate action. Let us look at a demo at it as well. So here the UI is pretty similar to the local storage, just that the functionality inbuilt is using cookies rather than local storage. So we'll again click on the increment, and we can see that, yeah, again, it's working, and it's reflecting the values in both the ways, right? But also you might have noticed that it's a bit slower compared to local storage. Yes. Just because, I mean, the reason purely is because we are using the set interval, which sort of polls for any data change, and that's the reason it looks a bit laggy. Yeah. So yeah, moving on. So regarding the use cases, so it's commonly used for authentication for storing tokens. And I mean, some of the other use cases again are storing user preferences like themes, or sometimes even cart items. So gotchas to look out for. So it can store only 4 KB of data, which is comparingly very, very less. I mean, based on the increasing complexity of applications day by day. And another overhead it comes is that, I mean, so we need to ask explicitly permission from the users to use cookies to comply with the GDPR. So we had looked at the two types of shared memory sort of approach. Now we'll be looking at the sort of the messaging approach. So firstly, we'll discuss about the broadcast channel method. So the broadcast, I mean, by the word itself means that we are broadcasting some information, right? So the broadcast channel API is a simple API that makes communicating between browser contexts easier. So, I mean, that is communicating between windows, tabs, iframes, web workers, and service workers. So messages which are posted to a given channel are delivered to all listeners of that sort of channel. So, I mean, it is applicable for communication on same origin. So this is one important point, that for broadcast channel, it is applicable for communication only in the same origin, compared to a post message style communication where it can be done cross site as well. So in this, we just broadcast a message to the channel and the and then it's the browser's job to send it to the other browsing context listening to that channel. Looking at the architecture here, so here we can look at the figure. So the broadcast channel named test is created and a hello message is broadcasted through the channel. The message can then be received in all the other tabs via the on message event listener. So this is how it works. Here is a demo of it. So here we can see again there are 4 iframes and 1 button as part of this document. So we click on say hi to all button and we can see that hi is being sort of broadcasted to all of the other sort of iframes, that is browsing context, and the vice versa is also true. And we can actually open a new tab and also see the same. So we say hello to all from this tab and we can see it getting reflected in this tab as well. So this is how the broadcast channel method works. Moving on, so regarding the use cases, so I mean there are multiple use cases of it. So few of them are, for example, we need to sync UI across tabs based on some user action. So basically if a user takes action in one of the tab and we need to update it across all tabs, so this is one approach, one use case. And another example might be, for example, if a user logs out from a single tab and if, for example, multiple instances of that website is open, so we actually want the user to be logged on from all of them. So again, broadcast channel can be used in this case. So workers, so now let us come to the workers now. So web workers are, I mean, simple means to actually for web content to run scripts in the background thread. So it's usually done to offload some heavy lifting to the background thread without interfering the main thread, that is the UI thread. And it can perform sort of input-output operations as well as sort of use XML HTTP request as well as sort of use the fetch API. And once created, a worker can send message to the JavaScript code that, that created it. So for example, it can sort of send messages to the JavaScript code that actually spawned the worker itself. And one more point here is that the data is copied rather than being shared. So that means the reference of the data is separate in the main thread and the worker thread. So there are mainly 3 types of workers. So dedicated workers, shared workers, and service workers. So we will have a look at the first 2 in details. And regarding service workers, so these are mainly used to do background actions, for example, like push messaging and etc. And nowadays it is commonly used in the PWAs, that is the progressive web apps as well. So let us talk about dedicated workers. So it is sort of the most basic kind of web worker and its access is limited to only the script which is spawning it. So as I said, it is accessible by the script which actually spawned the worker. It runs as a separate thread within the same process as the main script. So this is one important point. And as well as one document can have multiple dedicated workers. So for example, one worker is dedicated to one document, but a single document can have multiple dedicated workers. So in this diagram, we spawn a worker by passing in the, the worker.js file path, which contains the sort of the on message handler as well. And the sort of browsing context sends a message to the worker, and the worker can respond back to the script file which actually spawned it. Let us look at the demo of it. So here we have the worker kind, and we have a button called say hi to worker. So as soon as we click on this button, we will get a response from the worker back. So the worker responds with hello from worker, right? So this is sort of a communication from the main thread to the worker thread. Moving on. So regarding the use cases of it, so it's used in heavy operations, for example image processing, CPU intensive calculations, network intensive tasks, rendering optimizations, animations and visualizations. So these are some of the use cases of dedicated workers. The gotchas here are that it does not have access to local storage, so sometimes we might want to sort of adapt to some hybrid solutions, like we want to use local storage along with dedicated workers, but with it will not be possible with it. But it still has, it can access IndexedDB, so that is one thing. So lastly, we'll be talking about shared workers. So a shared worker is, compared to the dedicated worker, it can be accessed by multiple scripts, even if they are being accessed, across different windows, iframes, or even workers. So the difference mainly, as I said, it's the ability to be accessed with different browsing context. So creating a shared worker is very similar to how we create a dedicated worker, but instead of the straightforward communication between the main thread and the worker thread, we essentially have to communicate via a port object. An explicit port has to be opened to communicate, to be opened so that multiple scripts can use it to communicate via the same sort of channel that is created. And also the point to be noted that, dedicated workers do this port creation and communication via this port implicitly, and we do not have to sort of mention that. So looking at the architecture diagram, so similar to a dedicated worker, we can spawn a shared worker using its class and passing in the path to the worker script. And the document sort of communicates to the port that is there. So we can see shared worker.port.post message. We can post a message called hi. And again, the shared worker can respond back through the same port as hello here, right? So let us look at the demo. So here we have four iframes and one main document sort of here. So here we have a button for say hi to worker. So it will sort of say hi to the workers, which is in the four iframes. Say hello to all is kind of a broadcast we are seeing here. And say bonjour to alternate iframes. So it will do it in an alternate basis. And we'll also have a look at the worker file for this. So we click on say hi to worker. So we can see that basically it is saying hi to, it's responding back hi from worker. So we are saying hi and it's responding hi from worker. We say hello to all, and it's sort of a broadcast that we can see here. And next is we say bonjour to alternate frames, and we can see that this is being sort of printed in the alternate iframes here. So let us quickly look at the JS file as well for this. So yeah, now we can see the worker.js file right here. So here we can see different cases that we saw in the UI. So in the first case, when the event data was hi, that hi was received from the main thread. We saw that it posted back a message hi from worker. In case of a hello, it sort of looped through each of the port connection, whichever ports were connected, and it replied back similar to a broadcast. And in case when bonjour was sort of sent through the data, it sort of did a simple math and sort of sent it to the alternate frames. So this is how it works. So moving back. So I think regards to the use cases of it. So it's generally useful whenever you want, so we have use case to share WebSocket connections, sort of maintain some kind of centralized state, limiting active tabs. So this is one interesting use case where we can actually sort of have a sort of number of cap on the number of active tabs. That is useful. And coordinating among different tabs, for example, yeah, we can sync sort of UI states and other states across tabs. And regarding the gotcha, so yeah, it's not supported in Safari and mobile browsers. It does not have access to local storage. It can access IndexedDB, and it cannot access shared array buffers, which is again another type of data structure, I would say. So yeah, this is what I wanted to cover in this talk. I hope it was pretty useful for each one of us here, and maybe you will take back some learnings from this talk. So, and you can connect with me on GitHub, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And yeah, now I am open for any questions now. Yeah, thank you. Hello everyone. I mean, feel free to ask any questions if you have any. I mean, regarding any part of it, I'll be happy to answer. Yeah, hi. Hi, Ludovic.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for your talk. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
Don't hesitate, people, to ask questions.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. So, I mean, to answer that question for you, recommended. So, there is no strict recommended way for communicating. So, it all depends on use by use cases. So, I mean, if we are looking for sort of a broadcast kind of a logic, so in that case, we might want to go with a specific set. But yeah, it all depends on the specific use case.
Yeah,
that we're looking
for. Thanks for asking that question.
We have still have 5 minutes if you want to ask questions. 4 minutes now. Don't hesitate, guys. Do you have some recommendation or something to add?
Yeah, programmer, I saw your question. So what I meant to answer is basically it all depends on our use case. So we can use local storage, cookies and whatnot, right? But it all depends on the use case that we're trying to solve for. And each of them has their own pros and cons. So for most of the use cases, I think for simpler...
Yeah, programmer, I saw your question. So what I meant to answer is basically it...